Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Game of Thrones. The Walking Dead. Westworld. No, that's the West Wing. Westworld. There have been many podcasts which seek to analyse the complexities, the depth, the plot lines, the hidden story arcs, the beauty of these productions. Quite simply, the world doesn't need another one, which is why we're applying that level of discussion to the bottom of the televisual barrel and scraping it with a weekly celebration of The One Show! So hello and welcome to the world's only podcast that analyses in depth a TV show that no one watches or gives a toss about. It's The One Show, which uniquely, on a crowded pitch of TV show discussion podcast spin-offs, seeks to examine and scrutinise a programme that literally doesn't warrant anything like this level of scrutiny. Once again, we look on ye works of the mighty One Show and despair. I am John Holmes, and yes, while you've been busy watching Love Island and, revelling in their podcast where they chew over which vacuous contestant is popping a penis into whose equally vacuous vagina, we go baby farming with Chris Akabusi, some children are threatened with splinters, and Elaine Page fingers Kiefer Sutherland on live television. And I'm not even joking. Clearly, this week, The One Show was after a piece of Love Island's action. Joining me to sort out the chaff from the other chaff are the One Show regular and all-round Mark Haynes. And this is quite amazing. Award-winning journalist, novelist, broadcaster, food critic, MasterChef judge, and crucially, former actual One Show presenter, Jay Rayner on the programme today. Jay Rayner. The scant applause.
Yes. It brings it all back. It brings it all back.
Well, Jay, we should work out how this happened. So a few weeks ago,
yeah,
we talked about a One Show film.
Bog Butter.
Thank you. Where you had to go and plant some butter in a bog.
It took a year to make that film. It took a year and we almost killed a man.
It's pretty much the story of The Last Jedi.
I got this call from BBC Northern Ireland. They wanted to make a film about butter being buried in a bog. I hadn't had a call for quite a while. And I thought, okay, I'll do this one. They said, the thing is, we're going to bury it, and then we're going to make the second half a year later. And at that point, I hadn't quite reconciled myself to the fact that I totally didn't want to be involved in the programme at all anymore. So I thought, well, if I do this, then I can say I'm still part of The One Show for another whole year without doing anything.
That's a good...
And so we went up there, and one of the contributors was this old bloke. I can't remember his name now, but he was 18.
Yeah.
Had he not been real, he would have been a really offensive racial stereotype. Oh,
you don't know we couldn't understand a word he said. But he gave us these shovels to use, which were his, and we broke all of them. And then, by the time we came back, I thought he wouldn't actually be alive for the second half. But he was.
Also buried in the bog. But next to his beloved butter.
Preserved.
His family had said that he couldn't come up to the bog with us because it almost killed him last night, so he had to go up there alone. And that was the last one I made. And you took it apart.
We took it apart. And then what happened was, a listener to this podcast added you in on a tweet about it. You then sent me a message saying, could you follow me so I can DM you? And I thought, oh, shit. What did we say about Jay Rayner? That he's got, oh, this isn't going to go farewell. And then I thought, well, we didn't say it. I think we talked
about how irresponsible the British public are.
If they know where it was, they would have gone and dug it up. They'd have been lucky because Christ, trying to dig the damn thing up, they were meant to have geotagged it.
Right.
And they hadn't. It was just, everybody thinks there's this great establishment for the one show. There isn't. It's a bloke with a phone.
Well, that's the fascinating thing. I mean, how long were you there?
I was. I made my first film for the one show August 2009, and that was the last one. The peak year was 2011, where I made 48 VTs for them.
48?
48, and I was on the sofa about 55 times.
Wow.
And I was live every Friday night.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the thing I've got to say, and I just so that I can point to this part of the podcast when the BBC calls me, is many great things happened. I learnt a lot.
Yeah.
We made some great films. They do make some good stuff.
As we've celebrated
They make some very good stuff. There are some very talented people working on it, and I wish them well with their future careers. But it was also bonkers and insane, and I would say you can't stick it that long.
No.
I mean, it's amazing.
I mean, it's hard enough to watch, let alone to make.
Yeah.
So
you actually saw changes as well in the host. When did you start? Was that the Charles Blakely era?
Yes, it was. Christine and Adrian, who were a brilliant double act, because Adrian Charles gave this impression of neither being that interested in what was going on, but sort of there anyway.
Yeah.
It was like, well, I've got nowhere else to be at 7 o'clock, so I might as well be here.
Yeah.
And it was the right tone, whereas Matt is keen to be there, and that's what's slightly startling, isn't it?
He wasn't keen. We should jump straight on Wednesday's edition here.
Mm.
Matt Baker wasn't pleased to be there at the point where Anne Robinson started having a go about the
gender pay gap.
Gender pay gap.
And he started giving his CV.
Yeah. Yeah.
He visibly bristled.
It was brilliant. And actually, what happened there is Alex jumped to Matt's defence in really a time when she shouldn't have. Matt said, I do more jobs than just this one. I do two or three. Yeah. And Alex started sort of, like a sort of battered wife, began sort of going, no, he does. You know, we get the same for this.
Yeah.
But Matt looked absolutely...
He was horrified, wasn't he?
He was horrified, but he also looked as if he wanted to run away.
No one talks money. I bet you don't know what he earns and you don't know what she earns.
Mm. Well,
they're going to slide over there.
We do. Well, it's all over the newspapers, so we do.
We do, yeah.
Really? And does she earn more than you or do you earn more than her?
Well, I do three jobs. I do the one show, Country Final Sports, so it's different.
Very different, but here the same.
But the thing about
what you say,
and what you see in the documentary, it's interesting because
he just wanted to run.
Well, it got worse after that. I mean, Handbrake Turn of the Week is coming up, but this has to be a candidate at the point when they were talking about shared jobs in the home, and Caroline Quentin finally turns to him and says, "You just haven't got a handle on this, have you? You haven't got a clue what's going on here." And he barks the immortal lie, which every presenter of the One Show has wanted to say over the years, which was, "Please put on a film. Please put on a film now."
Curtain was pulled away. It was desperate paddling.
A beautiful bit where Anne Robinson, who I don't think came in with it with a sense. I think she's just done a documentary about the way that people perceive gender. So there was a brilliant clip from this documentary where she went to a primary school and then yelled at children for being sexist, which was magic. She asked them to draw a mechanic. They all drew a mechanic, and most of them drew a man mechanic. And then they introduced a female mechanic, and Anne Robinson sat there essentially sort of going, "You little dickheads, you know, how dare you?" But having come back off that, Anne was obviously on this gender thing and the way we accept that men earn more and we shouldn't. And someone like The One Show, they always want to be the conversation the nation is having. And yet when it comes to the conversations the nation are having, they don't want to have that conversation. Matt also very kind of bitterly mentioned that he did know how much Alex was paid, and Alex knew how much he was paid because, as he said, it was in all the papers.
They're split on us.
But she wouldn't let it drop, would she, Anne? She was sort of, oh, they're trying to slide away from it. They're trying to do all this. The dangers, the signs were there. She's done a documentary about it. You two have been in the papers because of this entire argument.
Yeah.
What do you think is about to happen on live television?
Did they never think that this was going to come up? Did they never think a guest was going to bring up the pay disparity?
Particularly if the guest was actually just made a documentary about gender stereotypes.
What was fantastic is that Matt dropped out of that interview after that. He didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Just absolutely sat back and did not earn his larger salary.
There was another bit where she said to him, it was before this as well. She actually went in at Matt for no reason, where she said, And I was shocked to find that these things happen in the workplace in this post-Weinstein world where, you know, men behave very badly in the workplace, don't they, Matt?
Yes.
he visibly flinched and had to go, Anne, what? No!
What? No, I'm fine. No, I'm Matt Baker. I'm nice.
Fascinating. You did it with mums as well, didn't you?
We did it, and it's no different from 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole point of this doc was that we were celebrating 100 years of suffragettes.
Yes.
And then the Harvey Weinstein scandal happened. And I was genuinely shocked and in despair. I know men behave badly, Matt, but I thought that when I... No, I'm just saying generally, I thought we'd passed on the baton, my generation, the very few of us...
It's worth saying as well, this show opened with In the Mood, which that sounds like an ironic trolling by the staff, because who's ever in the mood for this? You
know? And that was, of course, the Tommy Steele connection, so we should mention...
He was the guest from hell.
Oh, well, a kind of heaven for me. I mean, it was utterly, utterly perfect watching the car crash that happened.
Because he had anecdotes.
Yeah.
And he was going to fucking tell them. And it didn't matter how long they were. The one that I loved the most was the one that took the extraordinarily dark turn about the ship being cut in half while he's being interfered with by his senior officer. And then he realised that the man on the mattress was dead.
It was like a really bleak episode of Jack and Ori that just appeared in the middle of a show. What we'll do is, because it's so hard to explain what it's like, the easiest thing is to dedicate the next 25 minutes to everybody just hearing that story told by Tommy Steele.
Yeah. I was in the Navy, the Merchant Navy, and I'm on a ship, a Cunard ship, called the Sidia. And as I say, I'm 15, I'm on the ship.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're in the middle of what was called ice routine. And ice routine, when you're in the Atlantic in the middle of winter, means there's icebergs. The same time as the Titanic. So you're on ice routine. So everybody of the crew are on their toes.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in my cabin. Suddenly, the ship goes... And I went, what the... What's that? An officer comes down, he went, you, follow me. Yes, sir. And I'm following this little... I'm only 4 foot 11, and I'm following this officer through the decks, up on the decks, past all the passengers with their...
jackets.
He said, don't run, walk purposefully. I didn't know what he was talking about. So I'm trying to keep up with this great big officer. They go down to the front of the ship, the forecastle, and he said, well, OK, there's the bosun there, up on the shoulders. I get up. Up you go, son. All right, you're right there, you're right, OK. All right, bridge... Oh, lights! And all the lights hit the water. And I'm sitting on the bosun's shoulders. Now then, he says, anyone in the water, you point them out. You understand? Anyone in the water, you point them out. Yes, bosun. Starboard, 2 points to starboard. 2 points, there's a ship coming. There's a ship coming. There's a ship coming. Everyone's running around. All of a sudden, he pinched my bum so hard...
Ooh.
And he said, that's not a ship, you silly little sod. It's an iceberg. So I said, well, it's an iceberg coming close. No, 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 he said, don't know about that on the bridge. You just keep looking at the water. And these searchlights are going over the water. The iceberg is still there. And suddenly I see these two bodies in the water.
Oh, dear me.
And what had happened is we'd cut another ship in half. It was a collier called the Wabana, a Canadian collier. And there was one half going where the iceberg is and another half here. And there was a fella in the water, laying on a mattress, reading a book. Fella on the port side, reading a book. Another pinch up the bum. Don't be so beat and silly. So I said, no, it's a fella reading a book. And we looked at him, and he was. Dead as a dodo.
Oh, dear.
But reading a book,
no.
Laying on his bunk. The shock had been so bad...
Yeah.
That he just died. Just like that.
Well, I thought it was going to be a happy story.
Oh, yeah. that's the skipper on the bridge going, what ship are you? What ship are you? Into the fog, you know. Yeah. And I said, the fella can't tell you, he's dead.
Oh dear.
That was beautiful.
This was a terrible episode for them because, again, with that thing about sex, the people don't really like talking on the One Show about sex, and they don't like talking about things like death. It's a very BBC idea that there'll be someone out there who's getting upset by the things you're saying. So things like death are just absolutely.
It also has to be said, and there is an issue connected with it in this one. The One Show's audience is so large. I mean, they may not be very, very engaged. They may just be proving they've got a pulse or whatever, but there is always someone out there to complain, and they always will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a thing on the... Can I jump to the Titanic story?
Oh, please
yeah,
do.
If I do.
Right, so this brought back little flashbacks for me because years ago I did a film about the Last Supper on the Titanic, and coming out of it on the sofa afterwards, Alex Jones said to me, why was feasting such a big thing? And I said, well, you've got to understand, there wasn't a lot to do on the Titanic apart from eat and then later drown. to give her a due. Alex replied, well, after eating all that, I'm not surprised I couldn't swim. And so I then go in the next Friday to do my live slot. And the editor of the programme comes up to me. He says, 59 complaints. There are 59 complaints. And he says, now you've got a choice. I can't make you apologise on air, but it'd be better if you did. Because if you don't, they're going to have to open an official investigation. So me and Alex Jones had to apologise live on air to the nation for taking the piss out of people drowning on a ship that sank over 100 years ago.
She had some zingers this week. There was one bit she really laughed at, a reference to Kez. And
well, that's a barrel of laughs, that film.
I thought, what's she laughing at, though? I can't imagine Alex is a big fan of Kez.
What was the context?
Lee Mack was talking about Soccer Aid.
Right.
And he showed a picture of himself when he was a young schoolboy playing football. And it came up on the screen, and he said, it looks like a cut scene from Kez. And Alex cackled.
Yeah, the very...
That's a good haircut.
That looks like a screenshot from Kez, doesn't it? That is 1970s Northern school football for you. Yeah, all right.
Now, Alex really laughed at the bit about Kez, and she was still laughing when she had to go into the next link. So she doubled up about Kez. They were laughing. And Alex came back with, now, House of Fraser has become the latest big chain to announce its closing branches. A handbrake turn within a sentence. Magical stuff.
That's what they do well.
It is.
Did you spot a particular one, a handbrake turn, Jay?
Or? Well, there was one. I think we were coming off the back of the baby fostering story right at the top of Wednesday.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Which I have to say is my film where I learned something. But it went on and it went on. I'm losing the will to live because they did the film, then they did the entire subject all over again straight afterwards. But straight off the back of that, there was some incredibly obtuse link about lightning not striking three times.
Yes. I wrote it down.
Yeah, yeah. we all wrote that down.
Except that it hadn't struck three times because one of them, the boat didn't sink.
I mean, the use of lightning makes you think it's going to be something about lightning.
Yeah.
Funnily enough.
Yeah. Well, people don't say lightning strikes twice, but sometimes it can strike three times, except it's not lightning, and it didn't strike, and it's a boat.
Well, they do say, don't they, that lightning never strikes twice, but it struck three times for one remarkable Irish nurse over 100 years ago.
Well, was she really unlucky or really, really lucky? We'll let you decide. Here's Joe Lindsay.
When it comes to building ships, we in Belfast know a thing or two. However, when it comes to stricken ships, we know a thing or three.
And
this is a piece about Miss Unsinkable, Violet Jessop.
That's
who
right.
Was a nurse and steward who was on three ships that sank, except one of them didn't sink. The Olympic, which hit another ship but didn't sink and got back to port safely. She was on the Titanic, and she was on the Britannic, which in 1916 had hit a mine. And they managed to talk to her 89-year-old niece, who had few memories of her. It was one of those stories that you got the impression someone went, this is a great documentary. And as they'd looked into it, they'd gone, there's not very much material.
I think the classic line was when the niece said, she didn't seem very traumatised. In other words... Nothing really happened. And it was left with the final payoff line of that film was, in the end, even the unsinkable nurse couldn't cheat death. Because who can? Because she'd be 140 years old.
There was actually a little codicil to that line, which I thought made it hilarious, where the chap who did it, who's a Northern Irish chap, I think, Irish chap, he looks like a Satanist. And it took place in a graveyard as well, which I imagine had nothing to do with the story. It's just he goes, I would like to do my last link in a graveyard, as usual. And he said, in the end, not even the unsinkable nurse could cheat death. But she gave it a good go, didn't she? She gave it a good go. That's the big sum up.
Viola Constance Jessop died of heart failure in 1971, aged 83. In the end, not even the unsinkable nurse could cheat death. But here, she gave it a good go, didn't she?
That's, of course, what led into the Tommy Steele thing.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
But again, the look behind the scenes was... And I don't know whether what Matt was doing here.
But the thing was, he seemed to cue the story. He said, you've got a story.
Exactly. And it was, but it was one of those things where you know what's happened behind the scenes. So someone's gone, all right, as they always do, it's going, we're doing a film on this, so the researcher needs to go into the dressing room of the guests and say, have you got anything on shipwrecks or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And it so happened that Tommy Steele had. But Matt went into it saying, again, it came out of the film, and he just went, now. And rather than just subtly get there as a sort of story, he genuinely went, now, you've got a... Tommy Steele's got... And he forgot the word. Okay, he forgot the word.
Oh, he forgot the word anecdote.
Yeah. He was like, you've got one of those stories where you tell a thing. And I'm going, is he doing this deliberately? And then Alex had to jump in with the word anecdote. He went, yes, you've got an anecdote. You've got an anecdote. Tell us your anecdote that a researcher has teased out. And that's when he went into this rambling story about death. And Matt was horrified.
Absolutely.
And he kept jumping in, just go, well, I expected this to have a happy ending. It just got worse and worse.
Even better than that, it got to the end of the story, and then Matt gave Tommy a chink of light, and Tommy restarted the story, and it ended the same way. It was an amazing double thing of this story that had gone really badly. Worth saying, when I first started working in television, which was about 1998, I was working with a load of people who'd worked in radio and theatre for very many years, and one of them said, there's a piece of advice that was given to me at the start of my career. He said, and it's the most important piece of advice that you can ever know about showbiz and entertainment. And I said, what's that piece of advice? He said, Tommy Steele's a cunt. Everything I know about Tommy Steele is that he's notoriously tricky to work with.
Yeah.
There's lots of sort of funny things. So I had a quick look, and there's lots of, obviously, you can find this with anyone famous, lots of message boards where people go, I met Tommy Steele and he was horrible to me.
Yeah.
So I'm letting that go. But one thing I did find out, and this is not something that I learned from the one show, but I learned because of the one show, Tommy Steele is briefly mentioned in Ian Fleming's novel Thunderball. So Tommy Steele is part of the James Bond universe.
What?
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
I believe Bond goes into a casino and he goes, who's that cunt? And someone goes, it's Tommy Steele.
I mean, there was Remington Steele. Is that connected?
It just shows what happens if you don't die.
Yeah.
if you live long enough and have a career over 65 years, which...
The story, that famous theatrical story about him in Singing in the Rain is that, you know, because when I used to work in theatre, I used to do sound and lighting in theatre before all of this nonsense, and it was legend back then that Tommy Steele in Singing in the Rain in the West End, because he was such a cunt to everybody, every day before the show, the whole crew would go and piss in the rain tank above the stage. So the rain tank, you know, the theatrical rain tank that would rain down on the stage through pipes, and he had to dance in it. He wasn't dancing in rain. He was dancing in roadies' piss every day.
Another story that would make Matt and Alex stiffen as it was being told. Oh, God. One last thing. They just showed a little clip of Tommy Steele's wedding, and it was taken by Pathé. And if Pathé are doing your wedding video, you are old.
What I liked about it as well was the fact that Caroline Quinton, who we haven't mentioned yet, was at the other end of the sofa.
Was a Greek chorus.
Yeah, exactly.
She was the rest of the audience. I mean, it started off, obviously, with Tommy Steele deciding to interview her about the thing that she went to talk about later, and you could see on her face, oh, no, you've got to blow it. I mean, I'm only here so I can talk about this show, and now you're... And her face all the way through was...
By the end, she had narrowed eyes of just pure hatred to Tommy Steele.
You could see it. She started off... She didn't say anything for the first 4 minutes. Minutes 52 or something like that.
It was one of those crop shots where you can just see her knee.
Yeah, she just didn't want in on it. Then she got pulled in. Her reactions to... Firstly, Tommy Steele's anecdote was just one... Well, she was pissing herself by the end of... When she knew it had all gone wrong.
Yeah.
And again, Matt tried to get it back, and then he said, no, because this Taylor was dead. And Matt just went... Oh dear. The crew all laughed. And then you could see it, she was literally shaking with laughter. But when Tommy started that anecdote, back to Tommy Steele, I know, but when he started that anecdote, he did an impression of a ship hitting an iceberg.
Yes.
Right? And he did it so violently, and I thought he was having a fit. He was just going, rocking on the sofa, which was moving back and forth. And he nearly knocked her drink out of her hand. She had a glass of water, and she had to catch it. And it was sort of just, it was on camera, but at the side. And it was just a magical moment of live television going, going really badly wrong.
There's such a funny thing about the presenters not saying, all right, Tommy, calm down. And what happened is it came out a little bit later. So there was just a bit where they wrapped up the end and Matt said, well, Caroline's going to be doing Me and My Girl in Chichester. So make sure you put that in your diary or in your family album. And Alex turned to him and went, Matthew!
Well, you can see Caroline in Me and My Girl from the 2nd of July at the Festival Theatre in Chichester!
There you are, Tommy. Put it in the diary and the family album. Anyway,
getting very strong right here.
Matthew!
Anne seems to be the only one of us over tonight who hasn't got a musical in the work.
And it was like she was reacting like he'd got his dick out or something. She was furious. And this is just pent up Tommy Steele aggression coming out of going.
If you spend enough time with him on the sofa, things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Things are going to happen.
How do they approach you when you have a section? Because we obviously go into a lot of. We had the Nigerian baby farmers here. Yes. And we had the unsinkable Violet Jessop. How is it done? Is it a sort of central thing where people are saying, this is what I've got, and then.
So
let's
the
give
thing
to
that. Not to be pious about it, but the one show isn't actually about the studio. It's about the 1,000 VTs they put out a year. And those are farmed out. They have a different editor for the VTs than they do for the actual show. And they're farmed out all over the country, and then there's somebody sticking bits of paper up on walls and taking some down and taking them there and looking at them. And then they generally like to have a chat off the back. And it used to be that they'd get the contributor. You'd always be on the sofa afterwards.
Yeah.
This one, the baby farm, which was the thing I learnt this week about West African families putting their kids up for fostering so they could get on with their work. I didn't know anything about that. It was a great film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they made the category error of repeating the entire contents.
Yeah.
Just at double the length of time.
Yeah, because it was the hour-long show and they've got more time. It's they don't squash more stuff in. They just elongate everything out.
Well, they used to. Fill the time. And that's what's really weird. There was half an hour of material in that show. And it used to be that you'd do 6 VTs in the hour long, and I think it was only 4, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's right.
And one of those was on Chaz and Dave, God help us. So yeah, that's how it works. So it would be material, what can we do after, and you know.
Do you get chance to pitch, though? Were you able to go in and say, right, I'd like to do a film on this, or did
I did occasionally, sometimes. Okay. And sometimes, you know, I did 4 minutes on the modernist movement on food, and the Isaacson building, and how the modernists in the 1920s wanted to create a new, I mean, it was bizarre. I did that on primetime television. You think, that's weird. And every now and then, you know, Giles Brandreth would do The Life of Oscar Wilde in 4.5 minutes. Reithian the Extreme. And then you'd get something like, oh, God, there was one about the changing face of bar snacks and how the editor in charge insisted we did it in a pub that sold wasabi peas. And if it didn't sell wasabi peas, we couldn't shoot in it. And he got obsessed that wasabi peas were the representative of, you know, of the future of the bar snack. It was shit. I mean, I was there thinking, what the fuck am I? Why?
Rule of Three. A podcast presented by me, Joel Morris.
And me, Jason Hazley.
In which we talk to people who make comedy.
About the films.
And TV.
And books.
And records.
And comics.
And people.
That make them laugh.
She doesn't want people having a go at Martin, even though she can. And that's true of, I mean, most of my friends are idiots, but they're my friends.
I never really understood what Han Solo did for a job.
You don't need to know anything more than, like, he's just sobbing while being punched in the balls.
They were just trying to make each other laugh in the office. You have to show a certain amount of contempt for your audience.
Write your own jokes in the morning, you lazy bastard.
Follow us on Twitter at Rule of Three Pod.
Rule of Three.
Available now from all good podcastier.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
What's the strangest one that you did? What's the one that sticks out as going, I would not have imagined I'd ever have done that one?
The very weirdest thing. Actually, I think the Icecon building, the modernist one, was pretty weird. There were other moments, like I did one on Quorn. I hated myself for this because I hate meat substitutes, but I had to do it. And then we had this taste test and we went to go and see these farmers, and they booked us into this gloomy pub somewhere in Yorkshire with these three farmers. And one of them had a hook. Instead of a normal modern prosthetic, he still had a hook.
Wow.
So I thought I'd better engage him in conversation about the hook. Because, you know, I mean, the real problem with shooting these things is what I call geisha. If it was just turn up, interview them, fuck off, it'd be fine. But it's not. You've got to be nice to them because it's their first interaction with TV and yeah. You want it to be a good experience. And so this guy had this hook and he was a bit nervous. And I heard we started rolling as I'm interviewing them what they think of meat substitutes. And I can do this. And I look down and I look up and I say, do you mind not dragging your fork across your hook? and then they got the whole footage back and decided it was far too gloomy, and we reshot it at Westfield. Doing it once was bad enough. There was Christmas Recipes Fantasy Football League, which was lots of celebrity chefs' recipes being cooked off against each other. And this is kind of a symbol of how young some of the producers on this show are. Because it would all be, you know, Rick Stein goes into the next round against Gordon Ramsay. And when the script came through, it included the immortal line, and so Nigella Lawson beats off the hairy bikers. So there's a coda to this. So I said, we can't say this. And the producer said, why not? I said, because, and he went, oh, yeah, all right. But I was quite pleased that I'd found this. And I was due to be in the studio on the sofa, and Ricky Gervais was the guest. And so I thought I'd make friends with Ricky by telling him this hilarious thing that I'd found. And he went, oh, that's great. Is it still in the film? I said, no, it's been taken out. He said, then I'm going to do it. I'll do it on the sofa. I'll do it on the sofa instead. I said, I'm thinking, shit, no, I'm going to get into trouble. Yeah. So the only way round this is if I do it. If I find some way. So Alex Jones said, you know, we're live. And she says, so Jay, why do you think Nigella did so well? And I said, well, I think the reason that Nigella Lawson beat off the hairy bike is... And I can feel a body vibrating next to me. And Ricky kind of shaking like this. At which point, Alex reaches across and slaps him. And he goes, what do you expect me to do? He just said that Nigella Lawson beat off the hairy... Anyway... It went on.
I've noticed Alex does quite a lot of hitting at the minute.
Yeah, she's quite hitty.
She
all gets a bit tense.
She was very good at shutting things down and trying gamely to move things on. I mean, it always seems to fall to her to just try and do that. I mean, often in the face of hopelessness. In many ways. We talked about learning stuff. I learned that Alistair Campbell has never emptied a dishwasher.
That was a good one.
That was
lovely.
A revelation.
Lovely. I noticed I learned something similar, which is Matt Baker has never shopped online. He just says, I've never done it. I never have. And they said, so do you go out just to shops and things? And he went, no, if I want something, I just say to my wife, can you order it online? And he was really pleased with this. And it all went a bit quiet. And again, he couldn't quite work out why everyone was being a bit cold with him. paid more than his female co-host, a wife who has to order him things online. Very strange. But that's what I learned. He's never, ever bought anything online.
Other episodes this week, I want to just talk about the Kiefer Sutherland one. So this was a classic one show where a Hollywood superstar who has no knowledge of the one show. They are the best. You're absolutely right. Kiefer Sutherland was the latest. He came on, but he clearly, they'd been told and briefed by his people, they were not to mention his television and film work. That was not what he was there to talk about.
Well, what was he talking about?
Music. He's on tour with his band.
They made a big thing of saying this is Kiefer's debut. And the reason it's his debut is he is having to try and promote something which is not promoting itself. And that is his music career. 24 is always fine. The movies are fine. And this was, I think, the most boring show I've ever watched. I thought it was so dull. It was made worse by the VTs. I think there was a decision that they said, we've got Kiefer Sutherland, big Hollywood star.
Let's let it run.
Yeah, and we can also put in VTs that aren't necessarily as exciting because Kiefer will do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Kiefer did no heavy lifting at all.
No, he's not full of personality.
There is a quick point. They commission all these films and they have to actually be awful not to get on the air. To kill a film because of the cost, it really has to have something actively wrong with it. So there are a bunch of films that are always, you'd watch them bounce along the schedule and you'd know they'd eventually go out.
Yeah.
Jay, on Monday, they did, for the first time, learner drivers will be allowed to
practice on
the motorway. Yeah. So we followed a learner driver going on the motorway for the first time.
But they wanted it to be the first learner driver in the country to do it. So they filmed it at midnight as the law came into effect.
Yeah.
In the pitch dark.
The presenter said to him, any nerves? And the guy said, no, not really. He became the first learner driver to have an official lesson on the motorway. And the presenter at the end said, I thought that was excellent. Self-reviewing.
Treated it like it was an exclusive scoop where nothing's really happened.
Found it very difficult to care.
There was always also a very good link into it where, and I love this about the one show, where they try and play with words. It's part of the handbrake turning in a way. It's part of, right, how can we just do a nice little sentence here? And the presenter went, for the first time, we're going to have L plates on the M roads.
Well, that was the news in August of last year, and now the new law is about to come into force. So, for the first time, we're going to have L plates on the M roads.
I'm like, who calls them M roads? How are you getting around London? I'm going on the M road. No one says M roads.
New.
No, they do not.
Kiefer, you said you've got an interesting story about not passing your driving licence. Matt said, we've not heard it yet, so anything could happen. Well, something did happen, and that was that a bad story was told.
But this was part of, I guess, Segway Link guest tennis, because they got Kiefer, as we were saying, what they had to do was get between him and Elaine Page, who was the other guest, by actively trying to involve them in the films, as they always do, and into the anecdotes. So out of the driving film, you're right, they did Kiefer's anecdote, but then to get to Elaine Page and Evita, that she was talking about the anniversary of, they genuinely said, well, Kiefer, you're going on tour soon, and I hope the driving goes smoothly. More of that shortly. Elaine, tell us about Evita. You go, whoa, you can't just... That's nothing. There's nothing there.
I did notice today, this week, this is the first time I've noticed, there are no credits.
At the end of the one show?
Yeah.
No, there aren't. No.
It just, there's no, not even a series editor, director.
Can I also blow your mind?
Yeah.
What time does the one show start?
It's 7 o'clock, isn't it?
7 o'clock, BBC One.
6:58. I mean, I was on it for about 4 years. At one point, for some reason, I had my phone out as we were going on the air. Because if you were being live on the couch, they'd get you to be usually what that involves some producer going around the office going, come on! So all the research was going to centre. And I had my phone out and I looked and I said, oh, we're going early. We go, no, we're always on at 6:58. 6:58. Does that not do your head in?
Completely. So do they get an extra 2 minutes from what
it's a BBC One 7 o'clock. 6:58.
Wow.
I know. Now I've told you that, you're just...
Here's another thing I can't understand about the beginning. I don't know if you can shed any light on this, because this has freaked me out since episode one. Why doesn't the music start at the same time as the graphics at the beginning? Why is there like a second of just nothing?
I don't know, because every time you think, oh shit, the sound's fucked up, and it's gone... Wah! That didn't work on radio.
It doesn't start. It's not synced up, and I don't understand. It's something to do with the 6:58 thing. It must be. I can't.
There's a moment where everything is silent, and it's not yet 7 o'clock, dear, and it's live.
You're now going to watch it and check it against your phone and go, oh, no, it's 7 o'clock.
It's just your phone that's fucked up. The handbrake turn of the week, for me, came out of the Kiefer Sutherland first chat about Elaine Page. They talked to her about Evita. Then off the back of that, it was a case of, great, right, now we've got to get back to Kiefer Sutherland somehow. How are we going to do this? I know. Alex went, so do you sing Don't Cry For Me Argentina, Elaine Page, in the kitchen with a glass of wine? Ooh. And Elaine Page just went, no. And then they went, but Kiefer, you love a glass of whiskey, don't you? And he was like, well, yes. And then they talked about his voice, and he said, I need whiskey to do the kind of blues singing that I do. I thought, oh, they're getting this. And then they said, well, you don't sound like Elaine Page, you sound like Tina Turner. And they all went, ha, ha, ha. Well, now, to someone who committed themselves to public service until the very end, tonight's panorama will focus on the death of Dame Tessa Jowell. And it was like, oh,
man.
Oh, and it was like...
This was one of those one shows, the guests didn't quite gel, it never sort of picked up, and then you had this really raw piece by Tessa Jowell's daughter, and it was... Absolutely, in any other circumstances, very moving television. And this, it's a difficult thing because of those handbrake turns.
And you feel it sucking the air out of the studio every single way.
Obviously, she has a story which should be told, and she should be given a primetime slot to tell that story. But it's a difficult thing in a show where you're also going, but we've got to get back to Kiefer, and we've got to play this video about a BBC presenter learning to speak Gaelic, which for some reason we won't call Gaelic, we'll just call Irish the whole way through. That was a proper handbrake turn.
Yeah.
Is there a better way of doing it?
Well, what was interesting about this, because I maybe I wasn't paying attention, and maybe they said this, but then they spoke to Dame Tessa Jowell's daughter. But the first thing you noticed was the lighting was all different, and they closed the blinds of the window. Yeah. So you know you can normally see outside into the courtyard where people, you know, are just sort of staring in to see what happens as they walk past. They'd shut all the blinds, which I didn't know. I'd never seen that before.
They'd taken the other guests away
They'd taken the other guests away. But it turned out it was a pre-record. It was done much earlier in the day, and they just played in because the jar of the lighting changes, you know, they'd actually just made it somber. And I don't know...
Do you know, an easy way to get between those two is to say, earlier on today, we talked to...
Well, you could do that, couldn't you?
That's easier.
Yeah.
You don't then have to sort of go make it seamless, and that's all sort of like high stakes.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm not pitching for this job. The last thing I want is to be given the one show, right? But all I'm saying is I think I could make some very positive changes.
We haven't talked about the embarrassing dads item, have we?
This was the little...
With the revelation of the my dad's a racist.
Yeah, go on, do tell.
Well, it was, you know, people saying, what's the embarrassing thing your dad's done? Farted at the Liverpool Street Station. And then there's this woman who says, my dad always goes into chip shop and says to people, where are you from? No, where are you really from? And I tell him it's embarrassing, but he's constantly asking, which country did he come from?
When my dad used to go in chip shops, he always used to say, like, where did you originate from? And people were like, well, I come from England. And he went, oh, yes, but actually, where do you come from, though? Now, he did go into full stories and everything, but I had to have words with him, but he still doesn't see anything wrong with it.
It's not just embarrassing.
You need a producer as well with a strong hand, is all I'm saying, to sort of say, let's drop that.
There was actually no particular... Unless I missed it, unless I'd actually started to zone out, head into a coma, I couldn't work out what this film was doing there.
I thought it was probably one of the ones you were talking about, like it had sort of been left behind from somewhere else and it was the right length or something.
There was a classic one of those, I think on the Wednesday show, which was whatever the car, everyone has a story, and it went into a piece where three people with different cars had no stories about their cars, and it was just a chap saying, here's my Mark 1 Ford Capri, I pulled some birds in that.
My name's Kevin Folds and this is my 1973 Ford Capri. I first fell in love with this car in 1969 when I saw the TV commercials for it.
Powerful as a sports car. A car you always promised yourself.
And this was the car I always promised myself. All the cars prior to the Capri had been family man orientated, whereas the Capri was a car aimed at the younger man. If you had one of these, you would attract the opposite sex. Certainly, the car did seem to work the magic.
And that was it.
I couldn't understand whether it's because it's coming up to summer and they've got through a load and everyone's out filming.
No, that happens prior to April the 5th. So when they've got to clear the budget, that's
tax
when they'll be clearing them in March. That's when they're really scraping
this,
the bottom of the
barrel. Necessarily speak for the quality of the films that are coming up over the next year.
Plus,
we're only at June and we've done Tell Me About a Car.
And there are some. I mean, there are some that take 4 days. Most of them are a day shoot,
yeah.
Those films.
I've also noticed they tend to group them by region, don't they? Because you think, oh, they've obviously had a film crew in Belfast, because this week we've got two Belfast
films. No, it doesn't work like that at all.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so here's how it works. They're grouped by theme. So down in Cardiff is where all the food films came from.
Right.
And we would go literally everywhere to make all the food films. All the science films come out of Manchester. Northern Ireland has some weird remit. It's different areas.
Okay.
They may well have had two films out of Belfast, for example, but they'll have been shot by entirely different crews from entirely different parts of the country. Almost certainly not by people from Northern Ireland. I was flown to Northern Ireland repeatedly to make films.
Yeah.
And then you've got a unit inside the office which does things like My Dad's a Racist. Which is actually quite a good idea for them.
We're both pitching for this job. Yeah.
And they make stuff on the day. The stuff which looks really, really quick.
Yeah, well, there was a bit with... This was weird. Talking of Giles Brandreth films. Giles Brandreth and June Whitfield. Did you see this?
No.
So there was... And again, I don't know why it was there. Maybe I dozed off or something. But there was it's hard to describe. So Giles Brandreth...
Try. We're all okay. Friends here.
Well, it was... Yeah. Well, I tell you... It was another handbrake turn. So they came out of Lost Voice Guy. They had Lost Voice Guy, who won Britain's Got Talent, didn't he, this week?
Yeah.
On the sofa, obviously, they were interviewing him, and he was using his iPod thing to speak and everything else. And that was all fine, because the pre-prepared answers, and you know it's not... The questions have to be agreed in advance, because he's got to type them into the thing. So that's all fine. Anyway, they showed a clip of him wearing a T-shirt saying, one of his trademark T-shirts, saying something like, it was about disabled ramps, so I can't remember exactly what he said, but anyway, it was about ramps. And they talked about disabilities and access and all the rest of it. And then they came off the back of it was, thanks very much, Lost Voice Guy. Now time for another trip up the Stairway to Heaven with Giles Brandreth. And you go, whoa, you've just been talking about ramps. Really? Then it was Giles Brandreth with wings on, angel's wings, standing in sort of a CGI cloud sort of background, looking down on Earth, looking up from Earth, i.e. the local film unit outside Broadcasting House, was June Whitfield. Just looking up, clearly a shot at a different time, Giles Brandreth, pretending to talk to the angel.
This sounds like...
What was his item about?
Well, I don't know. It was an interview with June Whitfield as though she were dead.
Is this not...
The premise was, you've died, what did you like now, when you were alive? Now, June Whitfield is getting on a bit.
We've all been interested to know what it'd be like to have a near-death experience if we were the actress June Whitfield. Well, here's Giles to show us what it'd be like.
It's time for another trip up the Stairway to Heaven with the ever-angelic Giles Brandreth.
Welcome to Heaven. Or at least a version of it we're all familiar with. If it even exists, that is. But if it does exist, have you ever wondered what you'll do when you get here? Who would you like to meet in Heaven? And what would you miss most about planet Earth? Today, I'm meeting a star of stage and screen who's been delighting us all on Earth for more than 70 years. Yes, there she is.
Hello, Giles.
It's June Whitfield. Hello, June.
Are you coming down to Earth?
I'm coming down to see you now.
It was an interview with her about... Partly filmed on the stage.
Is this part of a series of interviews with people near death? About what?
There was a bit of an interview with her on the stage of the Radio Theatre in Broadcasting House. And then they went up to the roof, literally up the Stairway to Heaven. We're closer to heaven now, he said. And then he says, what was your favourite food on Earth? And he goes, she's not dead. I don't understand what's going on. And then it cut back to the studio after it all finished. And even Matt Maker looked surprised. And he just went, just to be clear, June is still very much with us. What is this?
Giles Brandreth's segment called Angel of Death, where he talks to
people on the shoulder and they die.
Now, obviously,
that explains a lot.
Well, we've been to heaven, and the good news is you don't have to stay here. You can go back to Earth.
By a lift.
Dame June Whitfield, it's been absolute heaven. And now, back to Earth.
Just to say that June is still very much with us, and we're going to end on a cheery note.
Presume, Jay, they don't watch. They don't know what's in the VTs before. Do they sit and watch them
they're
when they're
to.
On, or do they just chat?
No,
they,
no. There's no time to watch when you're live because there is a lot of stuff being shifted around, and there's cues coming in, cues coming out. Plus, everybody talks. So they're meant to have watched those VTs before.
Yeah.
During the day.
Clearly not.
But it's clear that quite often they haven't. Or that much attention to them.
Talking of watching, I mean, did you, over the course of the period of doing it, did lots of people recognise you in the street from the work that you did for The One Show? Is it a thing that's watched across the country?
So, there was a time, I mean, it's kind of curious and I can't explain it. There was a time, I remember standing on the station in Doncaster, crowded station, and everybody pulled away from me like I was some lion on the Serengeti and they were all zebras. And that was very weird. Mostly people look at me and go, you're him. But actually, it's, and you used to get a lot of reaction. If I'm totally honest, when that Bog Butter film turned up, not a single tweet.
Right.
At which point I thought, it's time. Nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody cares about this man's butter buried in a bog.
Apart from this podcast.
Apart from this podcast.
And honestly,
and thus this magic has happened.
The dorsal fin breaks.
Ironically, The One Show only talked about it once. I think we've mentioned it 4 weeks running.
It was a highlight.
And just quickly, I mean, who in your time when you worked there, is there anyone who was making films that you just thought they are great?
What, presenters? Right?
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, none of them are actually utterly crap, and you are pretty much at the mercies of the producer who's written the script. You know, Matt Allwright can pretty much make television on anything, even if he's baffled as to why he's done it. It's going to be really, really serviceable television. Lucy Siegel, when she does her eco-environmental stuff, is cracking. A couple, you know, they all seem to be able to do it. It just depends on what the bloody story is on the day, and we all come back sometimes baffled, not knowing what we've made a film about.
Matt Allwright had to do one this week on Nordic walking.
Really?
Yeah, he was talking about GDPR, you know, a good 2 weeks after everyone else had been. And he was doing this film. Again, it was probably just left over. And he was talking about small businesses who are actually being very inconvenienced by the GDPR thing because their mailing lists, people, you know, the Nordic Walking Company, for instance, has people doing Nordic walking somewhere. And they had a mailing list of a couple of thousand people, but no one replied to their email. So now they've got 90 or something. Man. And thus, their profits have just dropped off because they can't tell people what's going on and where they're meeting in a car park to go Nordic walking. So it's affecting small business. So actually,
I think you want Matt Allwright sort of do a face.
He did do a face, yeah. He did his Matt Allwright hangdog. Yeah.
Actually, you asked me how ridiculous it was. I once did a film where I had to go ballroom dancing in Surbiton, and I still can't remember what it was about. It was an on the day. It was made by the unit in-house, and I had to go ballroom dancing.
How much notice did you get? I mean, because they've got a roster of presenters, and they're going, right, who's good for this one?
Yeah, you would mostly get booked in advance. So when I was at the peak of it, there was a film every Friday night, and you had to have one in every Friday night. I was running 10 days ahead. So you'd shoot, let's say, on a Wednesday, and it would go out the Friday week. And then when we toned it down a bit, because frankly, I was losing the will to live, and it was, you know, down to 20 or 25 a year, then it could be months. Sometimes months, sometimes weeks. And then every now and then, and this was the stuff I most enjoyed, was when they said, we need to make something today. And you go and fill something on the day, and it would go out, you know, broadcast news styly with people throwing... No, they weren't throwing cakes down the office. But, it could be an entire mixture. And you never knew exactly where it was going to be. And the point you're making about, oh, they've got a crew there, that's why they're making two films.
Yeah.
It would be bizarre, because the Cardiff crew would take you to the wilds of Scotland. You think, why don't you get a crew that's in Glasgow? Also, when we started, this is a classic story of broadcast media now. When you started, it was a sound recordist, it was a camera person, it was a runner, it was a producer, director. And by the end, it was me and one other person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's noticeable. You can see that. If you were putting together a DVD of the best documentary clips of The One Show, that you took each film, and it's been going for a long time now, that is a DVD you could easily fill with some really top quality work. I can't imagine it would have anything from the last 3 years, and that's just because TV budgets have been slashed.
Yeah.
So you don't get that sort of beautiful setup. It's routine now that you just have to crack through, get it done, and get it back.
There was a good film, there genuinely was, this week as well, on the history of children's playgrounds, which... I've got kids, so I often visit children's playgrounds. They love them. But I've never... And you always see the same name, Wicksteed, on the manufacture... The name is on the equipment.
It's like Kettering.
It is in Kettering. Wicksteed Park is in Kettering. And I grew up in the Midlands, so the local TV ad when I was a kid, one of the locals, was for Wicksteed Park in Kettering. It used to come up on local radio and on local TV and stuff. And Charles Wicksteed invented, he was an engineer, and this is what I learned, who decided that what children needed wasn't just sort of grass to play on, but things to do. Mm. So he turned his engineering eye to things people could do in a park. So he invented swings and roundabouts and seesaws. And weirdly, the log flume.
And witches' hats.
And witches' hats, exactly. Yes.
I only know this because we did an item on Wicksteed on the kitchen cabinet, which just shows everything gets around. We did it first, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Because he made a machine that was capable of making 1,000 tuna sandwiches in an hour.
We didn't put that in a playground.
Yeah, no, we didn't.
Why is this man not on the money?
Yeah.
This is absolutely brilliant. But he invented the swing.
He invented the swing in the playground. Amazing. He invented a swing you put 20 children on. The health and safety was fucked. I mean, then they recreated the
first ever
slide. But
Wicksteed's still a thing.
Wicksteed, they still manufacture the playground equipment. Exactly. He invented the first slide, which was just made of wood. And basically, it was just putting splinters in kids' arses.
And
they've rebuilt it. And the woman presented from the One Show had to go on it. And she's like, so I'd have a go, and she literally just sat on it and got off. I mean, it was not sliding.
It's hard to imagine a park without a playground, isn't it? But all this would look quite different if it hadn't been for one man, the pioneer of the playground, who changed the lives of millions of children.
In 1918, Charles Wicksteed created the first playground as we know it today, here in Kettering.
But it was a good, it was a good example. And I was thinking in my head, I was thinking it. They came out of the film, and Matt Baker just said that was a classic One Show film. Yes, it was. Yeah, in that it was sort of pointless, but utterly absorbing.
Do you know what's crazy is now I'm thinking I'd actually quite like to see that, and that's the first time we're doing this 2 months now.
And you're not going to go and try and find the film.
It's the first time that someone's actually mentioned one, and I thought I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah.
If it was on anything else, if someone had said that was on BBC Four as a 5 minute thing, I'd have gone, oh, well, absolutely essential. I must see it. It sounds great.
I mean, it wasn't a classic One Show film in the sense that it was genuinely engaging. So, it wasn't. Well, bless them, they tried.
Yeah.
We also like to ask, of course, given the nature of these sort of podcasts that analyse programmes, in the spirit of The Walking Dead, really, what cast member you'd like to see, presenter or guest, die and how? In a sort of discussion of...
So guests as well?
Oh, you can include guests. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, the depressing one, the one that actually... I'm not going to wish her dead because she is. you're going to feel terrible now. Victoria Wood sucked the air out of the room. That was,
what?
Yeah. She was really furious when she came in. She was just livid. And just, if you ever can find that one, she just hated me. And the other one was Andy Serkis. Early on, I had this thing with Jay's food of the week, so I'd have to get something. And I offered him some chorizo, and he went, I'm vegan.
Good. You think a researcher might have?
Well, and actually, at that point, I then had to go and do my own research each week. I'd go, so, any dietary requirements will be, because nobody else would do it.
Imagine if you'd served him some peanuts, he had a peanut allergy, he died right there.
Yeah, you want to kind of watch that.
Yeah. Why was Victoria Wood angry with you?
I don't know. She was just livid. She was livid from the beginning of the programme to the end. She was just seething at everything. I think, if I remember rightly, she just had a musical of Acorn Antiques open.
Yeah.
And it was tanking. Mm. And she was there to PR it.
Yeah.
And she just wasn't happy. Yeah. Didn't want to be. And I made some crack about Lancashire cheese and how I didn't really like it. I don't care.
It's worth putting on record, Lancashire cheese is appalling.
Isn't that? So I still haven't actually offed anybody, have I? I've never met him, but I kind of harbour the fantasy that Alex Riley would be caught in some kind of whimsical, slightly sardonic accident. And a kind of absolute, excessive, sardonic, sarcastic, ironic thing would happen to him.
So he gets hoisted by his own petard.
Yeah, hoisted, right.
And it just cuts him in two.
Surfeit of irony and knowing kind of quirkiness.
And Tommy Steele just basically, he's dead.
He's basically the Timmy Mallet of the 21st century, Alex Riley.
If I was going to have one person who this week I think should die in a creative way, it would actually, unusually, it would be Matt Baker. But it was only because on Wednesday's show, they came back after this VT about a couple of BBC journalists who were getting married, and one of them was learning to speak Gaelic for Irish. The wedding. Irish. And it was quite clever because by doing that five-minute VT, the wedding becomes tax-deductible. Very clever. Very. But it came back, and Matt turned to Alex, and this was not a joke. This was entirely serious. He turned to her, and he said, I should say, I'm so impressed. You know, you see people with these dual languages. He said, I'm so impressed, Alex, by the way you speak English, because it's not your first language.
Well, congratulations to Connor and Colin. And as a Welsh speaker, it's really interesting to see how they're trying to preserve the Gaelic language, you know, and how they chose to use it in their ceremony. Yeah.
You do really well, considering that English is your second
language. Oh, thanks, Matt. You
No, seriously, I am. I'm very impressed by it. I am. Right, we've talked about your music.
It sounded like a joke, but he was really like, I am going to make Alex feel great about herself. She did not feel great about herself. She was really upset. In fairness, I think the other thing is, Alex is English. She needs to work on the accent a bit. Right? It's like when you see people in France and they're going, une baguette, s'il vous plaît. Little bit of effort, Alex. Come on. So I think that I'd like, I probably think that Matt should choke on a leak.
There was, speaking of language, just very quickly, there was another point where they asked somebody about languages they speak. Oh, I can't remember who it was. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But they said French. And Alex just went, oh, bonjour. It was like, what was that? Talking to them in their native. What are you doing?
I had no idea you were fluent.
We should come to any other business. So this is anything, you know, certainly for you, Jay, tales of the one show that we may not have addressed yet, certainly. But I was just going to bring in, because I mentioned it at the beginning, there was a point at, I guess, near the end of the episode with Kiefer Sutherland and Elaine Page, where Kiefer Sutherland lifted one of his feet onto the plastic table, the Perspex table they have in the studio.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
And the reason he'd done it was because Matt, I think, had pointed out that his boots were a bit...
Tatty.
Tatty is the word. And they were, but they're his lucky boots or whatever. They're his lucky rock singer-style boots. And there's a hole in the boot, right? And the unedifying image of Elaine Page leaning forward and just putting her finger in the hole in Kiefer Sutherland's boot and just fingering around. Well, he had to sit there accepting that this was happening. And it was just, only on the one show would I watch Elaine Page fingering a bit of Kiefer Sutherland. It's just marvellous.
I have to direct you. This is one thing which we're going back into the vault. Mm. It's something very special. You may remember that Chris Evans presented on Friday nights for a long while.
Yes, he did.
Now, when he joined, he had this thing in his head. I learned a lot from Chris. He was big on content. He would rip the scripts apart every Friday night. It was cool. But he had this thing in his head that there had to be YouTubeable events. And so the first one, the first Friday night, we did a film about fish and chips. So he got them to make an enormous bath of batter, which was, in fact, corn flour. You know, it's that non-Newtonian liquid that if you hit it, it's solid. And if you hand it, it's soft. And then got Matt Smith and Karen Gillan to run across it.
Right, now, we've got to get changed because we're going to walk across some batter, apparently.
We are, apparently. Here's the batter downstairs.
To prove it's real.
And Jay is proving it by battering a fish.
OK. Now, apparently, batter, the more force you apply to the batter, the more resistant it becomes, meaning that we can actually walk, even run over it at the end of the show today.
Right, OK.
OK, good luck. Right, brilliant. All right, now, it's time to see if the production team are having us on or if this batter mix will really resist our weight as we run across it. It's
Let's
real
hope.
Batter.
Let's hope.
OK. Matt, you're a doctor. Tell us what's going on.
OK, Chris, it's really very simple. We have over 1,000 litres of cornflour batter, or to give it its fancy name, non-Newtonian fluid. That's 1,000 litres of water. Well, there we are, with 1 tonne of cornflour mixed into it. So, this stuff is so special because its viscosity, it's a funny word, isn't it, is variable based on applied stress. So when I slide my hand into it slowly like this, oh, it feels really weird. It acts like a liquid. Whoa, look at that. Oh, yeah. Have you anything to add to that, Gillan?
In fact, I do, Matt. So basically, if I strike this with force, the atoms sort of rearrange themselves so it acts as a solid. I'm going to demonstrate with this baseball bat. Ready? Shall I stand up?
Karen, we get it. I will run over the viscosity thing.
Oh, no!
So the next week, He's got a great plan, and it's based. You know, if you put one of those soft mints with the hard, what are they called?
Mentos
in a bottle of Coke.
Oh yeah,
it explodes out.
Yeah.
So he came up with this idea to do a giant version of this.
And he is the best.
Because he was new to the show and he was on Big Wedge and they would do anything for Chris, they built a 9-foot vat. And then they got a jumpsuit and got stitched onto it 1,000 Mentos.
That's amazing. Oh, that's amazing.
You've got to look this up. And then they had an army of researchers emptying. You can't get Coke on draft. The only way they could fill this thing was by getting bottles of Coke. And all through the afternoon, so you turn up for the show, sometimes as early as 2 o'clock if it was a big one, and these poor fuckers were pouring Coke into...
How much a bottle as well?
I mean, honestly, they had crates of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it was being poured in and poured in. Now, what's the big problem if you're pouring it in from Coke for 4 hours? Goes utterly flat.
Yeah.
They then have a crane, and this is the finale for the whole show. They then have a crane, and Chris Evans is put on the crane and hoisted into the air with a mask and snorkel, and then is lowered into the vat of Coke where nothing happens. Nothing. I mean, honestly, it's worth looking this up.
I mean, that's basically a suicide vest. If it had been fizzy, Chris Evans would have exploded.
Woof, straight out of there. Nothing. Nothing. Oh. And it's cost thousands and thousands of pounds of
licensing. That is so good. If that had worked, we'd all have been talking about it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's what they should be doing. You know?
I mean, that was his idea, was that they should. He did a couple of others that worked, but after that, I think they slightly pulled the horns in and decided. Trying to be interesting. It's not what the one show's about.
Well, you know, we're not going to top that. Jay, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Here. Jay Rayner, what a...
I think that you have to understand that I'm on this so that I can never be on the show ever again.
This is basically your resignation.
Because you can't, you can't leave. So basically, you join, you don't get a contract, you just do as many films as that. And it sort of dribbled off with me as I went off and did the radio thing and got bored of standing in rutty, mudded fields. And eventually, when I did that last one, the bog butter, I phoned up the deputy editor and said, I know you can't leave, but why don't you just remove me from the one show family?
Nobody leaves the family.
I have actually, if you go on, I'm no longer officially on that board, which means I'm out. And it makes after you part this, of, I'll never be back on it.
It makes you part of the one show show.
The one show show. So. Which is smaller and huddling together for warmth.
Yes, it is.
Around one candle. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on and doing that. And I'm pleased to have been part of your resignation letter. I think that's awesome. Mark, thank you very much as well.
Hey, pleasure.
We'll be back next week. And remember, when you look at the television to look at the one show also looks back into you. Goodbye. Great big.